Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Impact of Influence, the Murdoch Family Murders. This is the unfolding story of a powerful South Carolina family, the mysterious deaths they are linked to, and our quest to bring you the truth.
Hello, friend. I am Matt Harris, Seton Tucker here as well. We are grateful you're going to spend some time with us. Always appreciate that. Impact of Influence on Facebook. And starting rolling with our Impact of Influence YouTube channel. We'll have that on the Facebook page so you can find it. Part of the Evergreen Podcast Company. And we have had some things happen because we've been waiting for this big moment. How close are we going to get to an Alec Murdoch retrial for the double murder he was convicted of his wife and son a couple of years ago? And this was the first stage, this hearing that took place in Columbia, South Carolina, under the guidance of Justice Toll. Seton, you were there, and it was, I think I should say, it went a lot differently than I think that a lot of people anticipated.
It did. It was actually not a hearing. It was a public status conference.
Okay, yes, so thank you.
It kind of started off a little bit later than expected. Alec Murdoch was there. Prior to it starting, he was chatting with some of the legal team, and he seemed to be in good demeanor. He was smiling and laughing, but that quickly changed as the conference progressed. It definitely was not a good day for Alec Murdoch.
It's probably a horrible analogy because it's much more serious than football, but I feel like it was right before kickoff when Jerry Jones and all the Cowboy fans this past weekend were like, we're gonna win this one, and then we're going to go to the Super Bowl, and then before you know it, it's like 28-0, and they're all sad. And that was like Alec Murdoch watching the Green Bay Packers stroll over him because Justice Toll wasn't having much to do with what his defense team was presenting.
Well, and I posted a picture to our Facebook page, which I thought was so interesting. One of the pool photographers from Post and Courier took this picture. And it is Alec Murdoch just with his head and his hands, and Jim just looks frustrated. Philip Barber looks kind of red-faced, and you could tell that team was definitely not having a good day. The picture captured it perfectly, so go to our Facebook page and check it out.
Let's explain why it was not great and some of the other things. Will Lewis was there, who is the lawyer for Becky Hill.
Yeah, and Justin Bamberger, who was her other attorney, he was not there. Also, Joe McCullough, who represents one of the deliberating jurors and also the dismissed egg juror, and Eric Bland, who represents four of the deliberating jurors, were all in attendance. Interestingly, none of Alec Murdoch's family or friends appeared to be in attendance.
It started a little later than expected, as the attorneys were in chambers with Justice Toll. They mentioned that later in the, I keep wanting to call it a hearing, but later in the
conference,
later in the conference, about how they'd hashed some things out ahead of time. It started, 30 minutes later or so?
Another weird thing happened before it started. This man approached the media and said, they're talking about me in chambers. That's why it's starting late. And he handed us a legal filing that I guess he had filed. And it was dated January 15th, 2024. And it read, motion to disqualify Judge Gene Toll for participation in conspiracy against civil rights of citizens. It was addressed to 23 members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Chief Justice Beatty, Justice Toll, Attorney General Alan Wilson, Dick Harpootlian, Jay Bender, and Michael DeWitt with the Greenville News. It was really very, very strange. I tried to read it and I didn't understand it, but just like everything else, Murdoch, it was odd.
And it doesn't seem to have any real legs as far as...
They did not address it in anything. This conference at all.
Yeah. So then the defense tries to pitch their case to Justice Toll. And what was the State versus Cameron case law that they tried to refer to?
Well, this was a 1993 federal court case in which the bailiff had conversed with a forelady during the deliberations. Apparently, the bailiff told the forelady that they should not worry if they were deadlocked because the judge was fair. And this was considered misleading because it tended to lessen the jury's sense of responsibility by implying that if they rendered a verdict of guilty without mercy, that the judge would have some discretion in sentencing. So they made their case that this was material and this is what they should rely on.
And they referred to some of the Clark Hill's communication that has been talked about in affidavits, which was things like, don't be fooled by him, watch his demeanor, when they were talking about Alec taking the stand.
Right. But Judge Toll quickly indicated that there was plenty of state law that would apply, and she referenced State versus Green, which is what the state argued was the proper case law to follow.
State versus Green was a bailiff with improper communication.
Also a bailiff.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, the other two that you mentioned before that was the bailiff. This one's the clerk of court. It was improper communication with jurors. Green had been convicted of murder and desecration of human remains. Jeez. In this case, the trial court questioned each juror and the bailiff and proved that there was, quote, no reasonable possibility that the comments influenced the verdict. It was determined that a Remmer hearing was not necessary. So let's go to Remmer. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. So in Remmer, a juror was approached by an unnamed person and was told that the juror could profit by bringing a favorable verdict to the defendant. So Green says that this attempted bribery situation in Remmer is different than this case because it doesn't go to the merit. And it's a far cry different than trying to bribe a juror.
Right. But what I did see that I thought was interesting, and I'm no attorney, but one of the quotes from the Green case is, there was no reasonable possibility that the comments influenced the verdict. It was determined that a Remmer hearing was not necessary. No, so the question I had, and I reached out to an attorney about it, was there's no reasonable possibility. It doesn't say that if the jurors say no, right? So it doesn't say if all the jurors say no, then it's clear. They said reasonable. So is it possible then the jurors could say no, but the justice could say, but I think there's reasonable possibility that it did have an influence, even though you said you didn't, right?
Right.
Now I've been told maybe I'm full of hooey on that because it still is the question of whether it rises to a Remmer
level. Yes.
Or not. So,
well,
it remains to be seen.
Nonetheless, by adopting Green as the standard, Justice Toll is keeping the burden with the defense.
That's important to point out, you just said. If she had flipped it and gone with the Remmer, I guess it would be, the burden would have been on the state to prove it didn't have an effect.
Right.
I suppose now the defense has to prove it did have an effect.
Right. So that was that whole thing that we've discussed before, that the defense was saying if it was Remmer or what was the other case?
Green?
No, Green is the one they're relying on.
Oh,
Cameron.
Cameron, yeah.
So if it was Cameron or Remmer, then just having these improper communications are enough for him to get a new trial.
In the Cameron case, yeah.
In the Cameron case. But according to the Green case, it would have had to affect the outcome of the case. So it would have had to make a difference on the verdict.
It was very clear that she's going with that.
It was Justice Toll's going with that. It was very clear. And I really think that a big factor in that is that this is state law versus federal law.
Yes, that could be.
I think that influenced possibly.
I had an attorney tell me they thought it was, the question was even, you know, state was involved, but she thought that it was how that Justice Toll isn't seeing it thus far. And again, she said she can change things. Thus far has rising to the Remmer level.
Right. Her contention is prejudice must be proven, not presumed. Okay. And I want to discuss that because in the day and age that we live in, you know, you can't, especially with the Murdoch case, somebody is at the store and someone's discussing the case just briefly and they hear something. You can't really possibly eliminate all external influences.
And they're not sequestered, right?
They weren't sequestered. So you would have to be living in a tent down by the river not to have heard anything about it. And not saying that they did, and they were told not to listen to media, and they were told not to hear things. But, you know, somebody yells out the window, Murdoch's guilty, on their way out of the courthouse. You can't control that.
I think the defense would argue the difference is it's a clerk of court. It's a court official.
Court official, yes.
Not just a random dude at the Piggly Wiggly. So that's what they would argue. So we then usually said prejudice must be proven, not presumed. The defense was certainly hoping that it would be the opposite. Justice Toll, what did she say about the witnesses? This was a blow to the Murdoch team.
She says that she only intends to interview the 12 jurors who deliberated in the clerk of court. So she's removing the egg juror, the alternate who submitted affidavits, and she really wanted to keep this hearing, she used the term focused and very targeted. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she also said that this was not the trial of Becky Hill. So she really wants to keep this very limited and indicated that the questions she's really interested in asking are things like, were there improper communications, first and foremost? We need to know if these happened. And if they did those communications affect the verdict?
Yes. That, to me, is going to be her simply saying, did it affect, you know, here's question one, anything said, question two to the juror. Did it affect you?
Right.
And it could be that simple and quick.
She says she's not going to address a lot of these allegations against Clerk Hill that occurred after the trial. For example, her book and the plagiarism.
Misappropriation of funds.
Right. Like that doesn't have anything to do with the trial. She's not going to address this Facebook stuff with the egg juror.
Murdoch's attorney, Harpootlian, kept trying to push the point of, well, we want to go toward her credibility. Don't we have the right to go to her credibility? Right.
Right. And they said something about this 2,000 plus emails. You know, she doesn't intend to go through the 2,000. Yes. And then I think Harpootlian said something to the effect of, well, we don't expect you to go through 2,000 emails. And she said, well, you put that there were 2,000 emails in your brief. She was not really having any of that.
No.
They also discussed these summaries that SLED did.
Can I back up for a second? Not to interrupt you. Just to point, I think what we should mention too is, she said, Judge Newman, attorneys, none of those people are going to testify. They were on the list. But so any attorneys involved and Judge Newman, not. They're out.
I think it would have been a really long shot to have Judge Newman. When they put that in there, when the defense put that in the filing, that they would like to have Judge Newman as a witness, I thought, whoo. I didn't think that would happen.
Or
Creighton Waters, exactly.
Okay, so sorry to interrupt, because, so we are on to the Facebook stuff, I believe.
Yeah, she...
The SLED summaries.
Oh, yeah, the SLED. So SLED conducted interviews of, I think, all but maybe two of the jurors. I know for sure they didn't... They didn't do Joe's juror number 630, and we'll get to 630 in a minute. But I believe there was possibly one other juror who has not been interviewed by SLED, but... I wasn't clear by what I heard at the hearing if that was the case or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, there are these summaries of the interviews that SLED conducted, but there's also accompanying videos. And the defense claims that the videos need to be watched because the summaries don't really include everything that's necessary to for the judge to hear.
Well, I think that's fair, right?
I think it's fair, but and she judge or Justice Toll kind of backed off of it a little bit. So she said that she kind of wanted to conduct this these interviews of the jurors and that she wanted to do her own fact finding. But the defense is saying, no, we need you to watch this because some of these things may impeach what they say. Because
they change their story.
She's getting some zip drives, apparently, of these interviews and the summaries. And I'm not sure if she's going to listen to those or not.
No, because she mentioned something about, we're not going to pick apart. They said one thing one day and one thing the other day. Something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. By the way, Justice Toll thinks the jurors, it's a hard word, jurors.
I know,
it right? is. Jurors will, that one day to talk to interview them. But explain what she said about how the interview will be done with the jurors.
She says that it will be conducted in open court, and there will be a camera of the court TV feed, but their faces will not be shown when the attorneys representing the jurors, Eric Bland and Joe McCullough. Eric Bland indicated that he would prefer them not to be filmed, not really be in open court, but
McCullough was on board
on this, on the same board. But Justice Toll said that there's a precedent of this happening. And you also have to think that these jurors were seen by members of the public who attended this trial. It's not, I mean, I think we do need to protect their privacy, but I think some of it's out there. Some of them appeared on different media outlets, interviews, and that sort of thing. So
Joe McCullough's point, I think, and he will correct me if I'm wrong, was that by putting them in front of a full gallery,
right,
it puts like this, people react differently. When there's a full gallery and a lot of pressure, there's more pressure.
Yeah, we talked
whether to, you whether it's identifying him or not. It's not about the identifying with him as much as you act differently, right?
Yes, and we talked about that. How intimidating it must have been for the egg juror when she was questioned in front of a packed courthouse. So certain people, I personally get nervous when I have to get up in front of a large group of people and talk. So I could see that would be very intimidating.
And to be the one, let's just play crazy game here, to be the one that says I changed my verdict based on what Becky Hill said might be different to say in front of 100 people than in front of a couple lawyers and a justice.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying that would happen, but that's his point that
but Justice Toll does seem committed to transparency and making sure that the public is seeing this process unfold.
So see, she'll be, Clerk Hill will also be, Becky Hill, questioned in front of the open court with cameras.
Right, and she will be questioned, I believe, by attorneys, not just, that was my understanding, not just by Justice Toll.
Right, Justice Toll's going to do the jurors. No attorneys are allowed to question the jurors. Yeah, it's as of now.
Now, and there's a good possibility that Clerk Hill will plead the Fifth.
Which we had thought a few weeks ago, or whenever it was, that would be impossible. We were kind of led to believe that because she's already commented on something.
I don't know that we said that was impossible. We said that they may argue that she would be forced to answer some of these questions because of the affidavit that she filed.
She still might.
Because that would be waiving her right to... And we don't know exactly what will happen with that. But if she does plead the Fifth, the judge will have to take into consideration her credibility and what that means to her credibility.
Especially depending on what question she took the Fifth to, right? There could be some that she'd be like, okay, there's some that might be more important to Justice Toll than others.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Does she plead the Fifth to everything or does she answer some of the questions? Doesn't answer some of the other questions? We don't really know exactly what will happen, but I don't think we'll find out until the day of the hearing. It was interesting because Dick Harpootlian asked her attorney, Will Lewis, if he would make her available for a interview. And he said he would take that under consideration.
Yeah.
I think that's a no.
Yeah, he was up there for like a half a second. He wasn't up there very long.
No, he was not up there long. And I will say that Justice Toll did say that she was not ruling in a vacuum. And this is what she's seeing the process look like so far. But things could change based on evidence that presented to her.
She did leave it open.
It open a little bit.
Just a little, but it's still a bad day.
She seemed pretty strong that it's just going to be the sitting jurors, or the deliberating jurors who are going to be interviewed, because that's, in her opinion, what really matters.
It's going to be Becky Hill and 12 jurors. That's what it appears to be. 13 people. And going to be saying, something inappropriate said? Did it sway you? Bam, next.
So let's talk about juror number 630, who is Joe McCullough's client. And she seemed to make the most damning statements against Clark Hill. So let's look over some of her affidavit, which was signed in August of 2023. She says that towards the end of the trial, after the President's Day break, but before Murdoch testified, that clerk Rebecca Hill told the jury not to be fooled by the evidence presented by Mr. Murdoch's attorneys, which she understood to mean that Mr. Murdoch would lie when he testified.
That's a pretty big accusation and a pretty, to me, inflammatory comment, if true.
Right. And then she says that she was instructed to watch him closely immediately before he testified, including looking at his actions and looking at his movements, which she understood to mean he was guilty.
Hardcore stuff.
Right. She talks a little bit about some, I guess, the former foreperson being criticized for handing Alec Murdoch tissues. Box of tissues.
She talked about some jury stuff, but we, you know, it doesn't matter what the jury is saying, right?
Right. What she doesn't really say to me clearly in this affidavit was that these communications
made her change her verdict.
She does say when deliberations began, Ms. Hill told us that this shouldn't take long and that if we delivered past 11 p.m., we'd be taken directly to a hotel. We've been driven from our homes that morning and we're not prepared to stay overnight. Additionally, smokers on the juries asked to be allowed to take smoke breaks, but were told that they could not smoke until deliberations were complete. She goes on to say, I had questions about Mr. Murdoch's guilt, but I voted guilty because I felt pressured by other jurors.
I see, pressured by other jurors.
Right.
That doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. It only matters if the communications with Clerk Hill changed her verdict in some way.
And also, we want to hear what 826 has to say, because this juror 630 says that this 826 and Becky Hill had private conversations.
Right.
Multiple times.
So to me, looking at this affidavit, I just don't know if they stick with the green standard, if that's enough. But it only takes one juror to say that if these improper communications happened, would it have changed the outcome in any way?
And I mean, I guess it would be possible even if she actually hears the juror say the things that Becky Hill said, maybe when she hears them, she might say, well, this rises to above greed. You don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's left it open. I mean, it's still not great for Murdoch's team. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure they think it's a big L coming their way. They have to think that at this point. So what was the proffer? I'm trying to remember what that part was. That was Justice Toll.
Yeah, Justice Toll indicated that she would allow the defense to submit a written proffer. And the defense indicated that they would be submitting some more detailed affidavits, which someone responded to me on Twitter, which I thought was kind of a good point, is, okay, so they submit these more detailed affidavits. Toll's reaction may be, well, if it was so important, why didn't you include all this information on the first round?
Yeah, it's possible.
So then after this conference took place, the defense submitted a reply to the state's pre-hearing brief. And they kind of go through the same arguments of why, the legal arguments of why they think this case should apply versus this case. I don't know if that will sway her in one direction or another. One thing that I did find interesting in this brief was there was this communication from this person named Lucas Pierce, who was on a Facebook group. He lived in Indiana and said that his ex-wife was on the jury and she already believed Murdoch to be a guilty man.
Was this on the comments, actually? Like it was comments.
Yeah, it was comments, but it was submitted. But this was presented to Clark Hill.
It was comments on a video, is what I'm saying, though. A comment like on a live feed or something, right?
Right. It was a live.
Yeah, not on Facebook. It was.
Yeah, it was, yes. It was a live feed.
Yes, live feed. But you know how people can comment as the feed is going on. Yes.
And this person named Lucas Pierce has saying that his ex-wife was on the jury and that she had already believed that Murdoch was guilty just because he was a man.
Yes. Yes.
It's not the egg jurors. This is a different juror, but this information was presented to Clerk Hill, but she did not bring that information to Judge Newman the way she did the information about the Facebook group involving the egg juror who was believed to not to be favorable to Alec Murdoch, that she didn't believe he was necessarily guilty.
And in this that we're reading, the implying that Becky Hill made up the Facebook thing because she knew about this or whatever, like it was a complete made up thing.
Right. They're saying that
we never did find a trace of it.
Right. And that maybe, I guess this, they kind of insinuate possibly that this Facebook post maybe gave her the idea.
Yes.
About the egg juror Facebook
to make up
page.
A Facebook thing because there was this comment on this live feed. So it planted this idea. Oh, here's what I could do. Say an ex said something.
Whether that's true or not, Justice Toll says she is not considering this Facebook stuff, but it is interesting that why Clark Hill would bring one set of information to Judge Newman's attention, but not another set.
Because they have proof that she, in her email,
right,
there's proof that she saw this.
And the one that she brought to Judge Newman's attention was someone who was believed Alec Murdoch was possibly not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And this other person had already indicated that they thought that Alec Murdoch was guilty. So
didn't present it. And they have, in because of the emails that we have now, Becky Hill, we know that she saw this.
Right.
Proof of that. Mm. More about it in Fitz News if you want to read more details.
Yeah, and we don't know if this will sway Justice Toll in any way or not.
There's a lot of stuff still shaking out there, and it doesn't mean that Justice Toll will listen to any or hear any of it or whether it's legally important.
Right. Oh, and another thing I wanted to comment on, if this hearing does proceed the way Justice Toll envisioned it yesterday at the conference, it's probably only going to last a day.
Or maybe two, but not the three days they blocked off.
Yes, Eric Bland said, how many days should my clients plan to take off, and will it be done one day, or there's 3 days allotted for it, do they need to plan to be there all 3 days? And she basically said, no, it should be able to be done in a day.
Right. So maybe if she's only asking a couple questions, did you hear something and did it sway you?
Exactly.
It could bang out through, and it's only the 12, right? It's not any of the alternates or...
unless something happens to change Justice Toll's mind.
But all in all, I think it's pretty unanimous vote from everybody we talked to who's an attorney that it was a big loser of a day for Alec and his team.
Yeah, I know. I think a lot of people went into this thing thinking, you know, there's a good shot that he may get a new trial. And I think most people came out saying, slim shot that he gets a new trial.
Yeah, it was a big turnaround,
based on the evidentiary hearing.
Yes, yes. So there you go. You want to reach out to us. It's Impact of Influence on Facebook, Impact of Influence, the YouTube channel we're trying to get rolling. Evergreen Podcast is part of the family. We're always, always grateful that you hang out with us. We're looking into doing some other crimes and missing people and murders around the Southeast region. If you have ideas for that, send it to us as well. We're grateful, and we will talk soon.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I can no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.